one's intellectual, one's in the heart.
Okay, so today is the 13th of Shvat, the 29th of January.
Almost at Tu B'Shvat.
That's right.
Almost.
That's right. The question has come up, what's the difference between emunah and bitachon? And if I understood correctly, belief versus knowledge. I mean, to some degree, this is a semantic question, but emunah means to believe something. Bitachon means to feel secure because of it. Bitachon really is security. There's something one can believe, but it takes a while for a person to feel secure. If I'm falling backwards, I can believe that my friend who I asked to catch me will do that. I believe in that person. But I might still get a little nervous as I'm falling backwards. A person with tremendous bitachon, I'm not falling, I'm falling right into his arms. So bitachon is more of a feeling, at least in the way it's used in many places. Emunah is the belief. Bitachon is the feeling that comes with the belief, or that should come from the belief. It usually takes longer to develop bitachon. It's more of a process. And then yediyah versus emunah, the whole idea of belief is trusting in the areas where you don't know.
Yeah,
what's the difference between knowledge and belief? If we knew everything, we wouldn't need to believe. I know there's Hashem, and therefore I believe He's doing the good thing for me even when I don't understand it. Belief continues where knowledge and understanding run out. Understood everything, if I looked in the universe and understood everything, I know why people suffer, and I wouldn't need emunah. But because we don't understand the world, because it's beyond us, so I believe there's a great and infinite and benevolent, infinitely benevolent God, and therefore, and I see that in all of the things that He does for us, and therefore, even the things I don't understand, I believe He's doing for our good. You believe that which you cannot know. Faith is required where things are beyond what we can understand and know. That's a nutshell where I would...
So knowledge is more experiential?
Knowledge is empirical. Knowledge is...
Empirical?
I mean, it's... I don't believe 2 + 2 = 4. I know it. I can figure it out. I can demonstrate it. Many people know there's a God. It's a madrega. But believe He's doing what's good for me even when I don't understand it.
How could we know? Like, we don't... Like, I never... Like, I know you are right there because I can see you. I can go touch you.
It could be a hologram.
Whatever you...
Let's just say Hashem.
Right, so generally we say we believe in Hashem.
We believe in Hashem. We don't know how He can't know.
I think people in my Draga know there's Hashem.
We know that Hashem is, like when you say, I know Hashem doesn't give me more than I can handle.
So sometimes it's just semantic. We use the word know when we believe, and we use the word believe when we mean know. I believe there's class today. It's not like a big matter of emunah. It's just it's a fancy way to talk. Sometimes we say no and we mean believe, but that's more semantic. But in the real definitions, that's the way I would categorize them. Okay? So we are in the Olam Shel Emes. Page Chof Tes in the Sefer Ol Hamidos. We're in Perek Beis, and first we had a general introduction as to the centrality of working on Midos and many related topics. And now the first Mida that we're tackling, the address is Emes. And to thine own self be true. I don't know where that quote comes from, but that's really why MS...
It shall follow as the night, the day thou cannot be
forced. Right.
Is that part of it?
So, the section we're in, it really started the page before, is Da'as Atzmacha, to know yourself. And what we read last time, for example, learning from the stories of the brothers of Yosef, on the one hand, our Chachamim say they had a din Torah, and they had rule, they had determined Yosef deserved to be punished. Yet, in a moment of clarity, they realized they had done something wrong. And he quoted the Beis Halevi, when Yosef says, I am Yosef and my father is still alive, you claim to be so caring about the connection between father and son, and Yaakov and Binyamin, what about the connection father, son, me and our father? So he asked the question, well, if they had Paskin, it was the right thing to do, then that's irrelevant. But the answer is the fact that they hadn't even thought about that indicates there was something wrong in their thought process. He says further in the bottom of page 5.
Why didn't they ask Yosef, if you cared so much, why did you stay away so long?
Like, if you were real, it's not like, if you really cared, think about me and my father. If you really cared, why'd you make your father suffer?
I don't know if they were in a position to be asking the questions.
Right.
But that's a question we ask.
Yeah.
Yosef believed that the dreams were a revelation of a divine plan that he was obligated to carry out, and he saw the Yad Hashem causing it, and that would have thwarted it. That would have caused a problem. It's amazing, actually. Yeah, why doesn't he send a message?
Yeah, it's like an Iranian hostage. You know, like, what are you waiting for?
Right. Yeah, that's one of the big questions when you learn those parashios, but Yosef believed the dreams had to be brought to fruition the way they were.
So the fact that the brothers came to him, he never had to ask for them.
Right. And they wouldn't have vowed if they had known in advance. They had a reason.
Got it.
But what we're attacking is...
I believe.
Why are they to be criticized? So he points out another thing. The fact that originally they're going to kill him, and then they're going to throw him in a pit, and then they're going to sell him. If you really have a shita, I know this is harsh, but this is what I believe has to be done. Or maybe this, or maybe that, or maybe this. That already indicates that it's not coming from such a place of emes. Thank you very much. If you look at the bottom paragraph on Chof Ches, V'zoi limud gadol avureinu. This is a big limud for us. That we have to analyze, scrutinize, assess carefully in our actions. If our feelings, if our decisions and our feelings are on target and truth. I made a decision. Yeah, it was based on logical conclusion. That's what has to be done. Really? Start asking questions. Might you shift it to this or that or the other? Do our actions contradict each other? I can't do that kind of thing. I'm not like that. Except every other day when I am like that. Does our conduct switch, vacillate from time to time per our ulterior motives? Am I really consistent? I just made a strong statement. I am like this. I have to do that. I've determined this is the right path. But am I consistent with that? Or do our stances actually stand strong like a boulder? So that's an important question for one to ask himself or herself. So now, on page Chavtes, he goes and gives us a number of examples, and I think in Musar it's actually important to think through examples. I'm not sure the examples that he's giving would be the most relevant for this audience. I think he's writing really to like Yeshiva Bachrim, but he gives an example. Chazan is davening too long. Chazan is davening for too long, and I go over to him and I say, you really shouldn't do that. It's tircha de tzibura. It's a bother for the congregation. I give him a little musa that he davenes for too long. So basically, am I really so concerned for the tzibur? Am I consistently like that? Do I maybe have negative feelings toward this chazan? You know, sometimes we're very quick to give someone musa, and we think it's because it's the right thing. It needs to be corrected and criticized. But what's really the motive? Was I concerned for his feelings when I did that? In the next paragraph, he talks about somebody who doesn't like somebody, and he's convinced because he's an arrogant person, and arrogance is a terrible midah. Okay, that's true, but is my dislike for him really because I don't like that there's a chil Hashem of somebody being arrogant, or is it because I don't like him personally? He gives a third example. There's a rabbi or an educator somebody thinks is not fit for the job. And so the person says all kinds of lashon haras about him now, because he thinks he's really not fit, he's not good, he's not helping the people he's supposed to help. But you have to ask yourself, are you trying to help the person? Are you concerned for the impact on his family? Basically, in everything we do, especially when it's to harm someone else, we have to ask ourselves very, very carefully, is it really l'shem shemayim? That's one of the big things the Bali Musar spoke about. Reb Zelig Epstein, I think it was the last Hanukkah of his life, gave a talk in our yeshiva about why was it necessary to have the miracle of the oil in the Hanukkah story. The miracle was that the military victory. And you know, we were able to get back what we needed to have. There were 200 years left of the Bayis Sheni, and things were in a terrible state, and we won. The fact that the oil lasted for 8 days, would have been, Jewish history would have been fine without that. Why was the miracle of the oil so important? Which is a question everybody talks about. And his derech, his approach to it was, Hanukkah was unique and stands out from among the other Jewish celebrations because the other ones were one-sided. The Mitzrayim were bad, the Jews were good, they drowned, and we survived. Even so, we don't celebrate the loss of life, but basically Shiras Hayam, because it was good against evil, and we won. In the Hanukkah story, there were Misyavnim. There were many Jews, it was a civil war. And when you're harming other people, and you're harming your own, it's very hard to know if you're right. People can have 150 reasons why they're right, and they're not so sure they're right. So it needed the testimony. That was Hashem testifying, yeah, I'm with you. You did this. This was the right thing. That was the way he explained it. And he used to give other Torah insights along similar lines. Be very, very careful. Are there ulterior motives in what we're doing? I'm giving an example when it's about harming somebody, but it could be in anything we do. And in the bottom paragraph, he gives an example of somebody who's sort of lethargic in his Torah learning, and he thinks it's because he doesn't have the energy, but if all of a sudden you got a call, you have a major deal that he could work out, you know, then suddenly he's full of alacrity, and he would be running to do it. So, constantly doing checks and double checks. Am I really consistent in the way I analyze myself and the way I act and the decisions I make? So if you turn the page long, but I went kind of quickly through those examples. I'm going to read them inside, but let's see on page long, the first full paragraph. Sometimes we give two or three reasons. This is an interesting insight. Two or three reasons to justify something that we're about to do. Why are you doing that? Well, first of all, like this. And second of all, like this. And anyway, third of all, like that. The lady doth protest too much, methinks. He's using sort of halachic terminology. Is each reason sufficient in and of itself? Or is it what we call a tziruf? It's a combination. Sometimes in halacha, for one reason alone, wouldn't be grounds to be lenient. But first of all this, and second of all, you take this into account, and that, see, the three considerations together. So in our own actions, is one argument alone, is each argument alone enough to justify it? Or did it need the combination? Then you have to think, okay, so you're saying no single reason is really good enough. So does it really get stronger with all three? Or are we just trying to allow what really should not be allowed? I once told over in Shul, in the Torah Tamimah's historical work, Makar Baruch, he has an interesting account there. He's talking about the Nitziv's father. Nitziv is his uncle, and this is Nitziv's father. Apparently, where they live, in Nevarik, I guess, doctors used to dress like rabbis. There were two people who dressed, I guess, sort of in like more regal, I guess, wore the spudik or whatever. So he tells a story that at one time, what happened was, somebody was sick in the Rav's house, so they called the doctor over. The doctor was on a Shabbos, and they called the doctor over, and so the doctor was sitting there, and while he's sitting there, somebody came looking for the Rav, and I guess didn't know what he looked like. So came in, and asked the Shaila, and the doctor paskened. it was a whole funny story there, but What I found striking about the story is that when he was explaining his actions, he said, I'm not even a Rav, and I could think of a few reasons why that should be permissible. So I made a Kal V'chomer. If I could think of a few reasons why it should probably be permissible, Kal V'chomer, the rabbi, would have permitted it. The question is whether the reasons are right. I could think of an argument like that. I think, is it correct? So sometimes, you know, we have all kinds of reasons. I'm doing this because first of all like this, second of all like that, third of all like that. And each one is, 0.02% of a reason. If you put it all together, you have less than 10%. Anyway. V'haklal ha'ola shel olam tzrichen lishal as etzmenu ma'u ritzon ha'bori b'matzav. You always have to ask yourself, what is the will of the Creator in my circumstance? Ma'a kadosh baruch hu rotza sh'ani asa. What does Hashem want that I should do? V'kazeh amru chazal. This is a beautiful way of reading this Mishnah. He says, that's what Chazal means. In the second paragraph of Pirkei Avos, it says, Asei ritzono kirtzonecha. Make his will like
your
yours.
Make your will right. Like his will.
Right?
So that his will will be like
ritzono kirtzonecha.
Yeah, I'm just doing with the first phrase, though. You're beyond me. But make his will like your will. Simple pshat, it means, whatever Hashem wants, make that what as if that's what you want. The same alacrity. There are things I want in life, and I'm willing to put in energy to go get them. So make the things that Hashem wants as if they're the things that I want, and treat it with the same enthusiasm. One should focus. Focus yourself. That's what tisrakes means. Merkaz is the center. You should focus and think, what's the will of Hashem? Without making any thoughts, to give any consideration with your own personal wills, Uritzono shel Hashem ta'asek iluhu ritzon chamamish, and do the will of Hashem as if it is literally your will. V'lo shetelech acha haratzon shelcha v'tatzdiko kadei shiyatam ritzon Hashem be'eni atzmecha. Now, this is the way he's reading this Mishnah, is that people tend to do the opposite. I make my will like it's his.
Yeah, well, this is what Hashem really meant.
Right, exactly. Reinterpreting God's will per what I like. So the Mishnah says, no, do the start the other way. Think objectively, what does Hashem want? And then align what you want to do with that. Don't think, what do I want? And then figure out, you know, how to... Many years ago, I used to listen to a certain speaker. Basically, he was very into like sort of pop psychology, and he was always there was always a Dvar Torah. It was the Torah kind of twisted and stuffed in to this newfangled idea, but it wasn't the Ritzon Hashem. Lasos Ritzon Chak Iluhu Ritzonos. That's an interesting way to read that Mishnah. Make His will like it yours, with emphasis on it, not the opposite, which people tend to do. If a person will say, I don't really have ulterior motive, negius means where it touches you, where it affects you. I'm not affected in this, because it's true, I stand to make a lot of money here, or I stand to gain a lot, but I don't need that. Da shesheker b'chazav hu dover. Know that he is speaking falsehood. Shekvar mi'id alenu ha-Torah, for the Torah already attests to the fact, ha-shochet ya'aver enei chachamim v'salif devei tzadikim. Bribery does corrupt. When a person stands to gain, it corrupts our thinking. The Gemara in Ksuvis, where it's talking about this, tells stories to illustrate how extreme that psychological power is. There's a fellow, he had a bug or a bird on his shoulder, not a fellow, it was one of the chacham, he had something on his shoulder, and the other person came up and brushed it off for him. So he turned and he said, Pasil nalach ladina, and now I can't judge you in a din Torah. And then, so he attended the din Torah, and he's watching, and as that person is the plaintiff, he's thinking to himself, oh, he should say like this, he could argue like that. Yeah, what did he do? He kind of brushed a bug off his shoulder, but there's a chazal say, ma shochad shahu chad. What is shochad? The word for bribe, shahu, it makes the... It's actually two ways of understanding this drasha, but one way is it makes the two people like one. Now we're connected. You did me a favor, we're connected. So where I stand to gain, my thinking is colored. As an aside, the Chazon Ish and Emunah Bitachon says it's only true when actually there's two parties, a person in judging Torah, Chacham can be trusted to be above Negius, but that's a Chiddush. Basically in life, when we have ulterior motives, when something affects us, it does color our thinking, and therefore we have to do a lot of scrutiny, self-analysis, to see why we're really acting or thinking the way we are. Uperish Rashi, Mishimakibel Shochan Meno, Efshashel Yates Levavo Etzel Lahapech Veschusa. Rashi says there, once I've received a bribe from him, it's impossible that it won't turn my heart, and which will flip things in the direction of his merit. I mentioned to you, like in the around 1950, when there was talk of trying to get the Sanhedrin back together, Rabbi Maimon Fishman was one of the people behind it, and they asked him how. It says the people on Sanhedrin have to be sonim amonim badin, people who despise money. They have to be so above any alternative. How are you going to find people like that? And he said, "For geld kemen altsbakum, money can get anything." Which is pointing out the irony of the whole thing, right? Teva ha'adam hu she'yirama she'rotze liros. The nature of man is that a Simon and Garfunkel quote there? Oh my goodness. No?
Wait,
how do you know about Simon Garfunkel?
I read a book about
it. Two Jewish man, boys go out, man, right,
yeah,
you know.
It's the last Jewish music. Anyway, man hears what he wants to hear. No, so I think it's... I've heard them cited in Shmuzin. by Rebbeim, American Rebbeim.
Really? So what is it? The nature of man
is that he sees what he wants to see.
He sees what he wants to see.
Yeah, I believe the line in, for those of us who grew up back in the 60s, it was, man hears what he wants to hear. Anyway, V'yamin, I just throw that in to keep you... V'yamin ma'asherot salam, he believes what he wants to believe. This is the whole point of this perek, is that's why emes is so important. Because if everything is not going through the filter of MS, then I'm...
It's all relative.
Yeah, then, I'm making decisions about how it should be, but they're not accurate. V'yad ha'adam liros osa davar, pam ba'ofen efer, pam acher ba'ofen shayni. A person can one time see something one way, and one time, and then another time see a different kafi ha'negiyo shalom. I mean, so much of Musar is about this. I don't know if anybody's ever read some of the... teachings of Rav Henoch Leibowitz from Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim. So many shmuzin about the power of negiyos, that we think we're seeing things objectively and clearly, and he's quoting from many Bali Musar. The Moshel Yesh Leploni Chotzer Hasmucha L'Chotzer Chaver. For example, just give one example, a person has a yard near his friend's yard. B'nogeya Tipuli HaKarka Yira HaGvul Yosar Karv L'Tzad Shalom. Where is the property line? Well, when I gotta mow my lawn or blow my leaves, it's very close. It's right next to my window. But now, if I, I'm gonna sell my house, all of a sudden the line it moves. What do you know?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. All of a sudden it got up and walked over. And therefore, top of Lamed Aleph, Rak Misha Makayim Da Atzmacha. Only somebody who fulfills know yourself. To understand himself and recognize the motives that are hidden within him, can really complete himself. I mean, the first step in anything is diagnosis. If I can't really diagnose what I am, what weaknesses or what strengths I have, then I'm treating the wrong thing. The Bali Musar used to say, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the great genius at diagnosis and treatment. His Talmidim already said, we only know how to diagnose, we don't know how to treat, which is amazing, because they were quite good at Musar. But Rabbi Yisrael could zero in on something and say, this is exactly what you have to work on, this is what's good, this is what's not good.
Wait, and so the students thought they could diagnose?
Yeah, they felt, they didn't know, but how exactly do we correct that? They felt weakened. They said the Rebbe could diagnose and treat. We can tell, even recognizing what
that's huge to be able to recognize.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
In some ways, that's even harder. Like you would think, like a lesser known, like someone who didn't really understand would say, "Well, we know how to."
Well, how can you treat if you don't know what you're
treating? Exactly, because they don't understand. The harder thing is the accurate diagnosis, especially I think in Musar. I tried to ask this before, but maybe I didn't articulate it too well. That, like, how do you even begin to know what are the different midos, and so that you know whether or not you're right there. You have to know yourself, but if yourself is deficient, does a person who lacks a certain thing even have an understanding of what it is that he lacks?
Yeah, look, I think there's certain things that we can all work on. There's general health, and then there's very specific things. The Bali Musar were great experts, that they really could
zeroing in on the particular.
Right. The good news is that if we're very lacking, there's a lot of general work we can do. You go to the doctor. Well, first of all, don't eat 17 custard donuts a day.
But a person like an addict or someone who's lying to themselves, that's the point of the story, then they don't see anything.
Right.
Or the defenses of it's not me, it's this, that, it's whatever. To know yourself is a real high madrega.
Right, but I don't think it's binary. I don't think... It's not like there are people who are in total denial of everything. That's clinically problematic.
So these guys, they're still managing.
Yeah, most of us are somewhere in the middle.
Right.
We're somewhere in the middle. In some ways, I am introspective and accurately criticizing myself. In other areas, I'm blind to my weaknesses. And the goal is to move it closer to MS. And like almost all things in Musa, I don't think it's a all or nothing. There's madrigas. I think greater people are much closer to.
So they're really talking to your basic yeshiva person, as opposed to, let's say, Twersky, who's all of his examples are addicts.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we should distinguish between Musa
and
that which is clinically. Even though it's true, Chazal say, "Ein adam chote elam kein nichnas bo ruach shtus." A person doesn't sin unless an air of insanity has entered him. So you could make an equation. But when a person needs real therapy, Musar is not. Musar could be helpful in addition. But
this is for your basic, altogether. We're fine tuning, basically. Yeah.
Well,
here.
This is for healthy ruchnias, but it's not where there's a real clinical problem.
Denial.
Yeah, if a person's a pathological liar, it's probably beyond. Help. Yeah, the kleptomaniac. Right. You can learn about Lo Signo, but it's more than that.
Right.
That's already.
Right.
That's beyond.
Right. The serial killer is not controlling his anger. Right. We're like in a different territory here.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
So it's true, this farm talk about choli hanev, we talk about in terms of illness and well-being and diagnosis, but we're talking at a Musar level. It's very important
to
know.
Exactly.
It's very important to know where it's not Musar and it's something beyond.
Yeah, okay, good.
And it's a big error to try to treat.
Right, this is.
That could be a fatal error. I'm sorry.
I have a question. I don't know whether it could be a general answer, but I know that you're supposed to be, one thing that we're supposed to be doing is always being mevater. It's a big thing and going for shalom, right? However, what happens if, for example, you were really hurt by somebody? I was discussing with somebody once. And, are you just supposed to always go for shalom and be mevater and work on your midos? Or, I know you probably can't, there's no, do you know what I mean? Is there a blank answer with that?
Oh, no, I don't think there is, but it says in the Torah, L'osisna sachicha v'l'havacha hocheach tochiach samrisecha, which according to Men Rishona means don't hate the other person in your heart, rebuke. And they're connected because if I'm going to keep it bottled up, I don't want to say anything. It's not good me though, so I'm going to keep it bottled up. Versus strategically and appropriately and in a controlled way, having it out. I have to say, can we talk about this? I'm very upset about such and such. There are ways of reaching resolution by bringing things up and working them out. Yeah, some things we can train ourselves to be mevater. It wasn't the biggest deal, I can let it go. But if it's not really vitor, if it's just, what is the term they use, suppression, and then it becomes like a pressure cooker and it explodes at a certain point, that's not good. Yeah, there are some things that are...
that's what they just said here, too. If it's clear that this is, what is the Ratzon Hashem? Like a far-out example... If someone is a child molester, and you have reason to believe it, you're not supposed. I would imagine that is not within the Ratzon Hashem. And if you hear about it, you're obligated to report. You don't say just "Oh, I'm sorry to hear. I don't listen to Lashon Hara." But you could see the "I don't want to listen" the Mevater sort of. If it's really a wrong thing, you have to speak up or find another way to.
That's for sure. But even in cases less extreme, but a person can be hurt.
Yeah, I just looked for an extreme example where you could be mevater and say, "Oh, I don't."
Yeah, that would be
that.
The ultimate error in vitor.
But
the
it
other
happens.
Extreme, I had a friend who had one of these Far Side comics where there's a bunch of cowboys sitting around, and one of them has his feet up in the air, clearly has been shot over, and the other guy has a smoking gun, and the caption said, "You guys are all witnesses." He laughed when my marshmallow caught fire. So I was okay. that could be worked on.
What if the person doesn't get it, meaning the one who, the Mavata person is trying to give the appropriate tochacha in a controlled way, doing everything right, but the person on the receiving end is just clueless, just doesn't get it at all. How much effort does one put into that?
It's a mitzvah to say that which will be heard. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah not to say that which won't be heard.
They can't accept it.
And so then, what happens with that person? They just the non-hearer just continues on their merry way, stumbling.
We can't solve every problem. If I had a way to solve it, I'm supposed to. If my words are going to do nothing, unfortunately, there are a lot of problems in the world that pain us, but we're not solving them. Continue to search for solutions, but. Yeah, sometimes we delude ourselves. Oh, if I'll just say this, it'll, and then but play it out. You have to play a little bit of chess. I'm going to go here, he's going to go. It's just going to end in a stalemate. It's not going to go anywhere. Sometimes it's like that. It's only, Chazal said, just like the mitzvah to say davar shenishma, so is it a mitzvah not to say davar shelo, that will not be heard.
So that person just continues harming other people in their path. So
it's not your responsibility.
Yeah, if you have an ability to protect people, you can. If what can you do? But it's not. Not everybody's going to hear tochacha. It's just the way it is. It's one of many things we don't understand in the world. We can't solve everything. So the last paragraph of this section on page Lamed Aleph. Only person who fills know yourself. The person who doesn't recognize himself, his whole life, he's falling into traps. He's falling into sin of bad behavior and bad midos without recognizing it. Bali Musa talk about a person who, at every step of the way, is doing the wrong thing. It's all off. It's all based on faulty perceptions, faulty ambitions, and so on. Umidas ha'emes hanal, the aforementioned midas ha'emes who are yisod l'tikun midas ha'adam. It's the foundation for fixing man. I mentioned that Bali Musa talk about like one mida in the center and other midas that sort of revolve around it. Actually, different people have different midas in the middle. Some have a chesed, and everything revolves around the chesed. So there's emes. And so he's putting emes in the middle. First, got to know myself. And then, how I'll do chazah, how I'll do this, how I'll do that, how I'll relate to other midas has to first come from emes. The mashal. Kol pam shekoes al chavero. Every time he gets angry at his friend, yivdok es atzmo, he should check himself, yishol, he should ask, lama ni koes alav, why am I getting angry at him? Eza chesaron yishbi, yishagorim li luchos, what's the lacking, what's within me that is causing me to get angry? Is it because I think I deserve better in the world? God hasn't given me enough goodness in life. I deserve more, and therefore everything upsets me. Is it because I'm really jealous of him? Is it something else that's bothering me? And it's just, maybe I didn't get enough sleep last night. Like, what's causing it? V'chein b'chol mida u'mida la'olam yidrush v'yachkar machshavos v'hagashos. Every mida he should seek out, analyze his thoughts and feelings. Limso ha'pagam, to find the taint, v'hato'os, and the mistake, ha'munach v'hem, that's what's licked in them. Vizak Mendes of English, you know, that what's at the foundation of it? Avamisha Aino Khosh Lahavanas Atma, a person who is not concerned to understand himself, Olam Ol Yakir Chesronosav, will never recognize his failings. Virak Yakir bin Nakel Chesronosem Shalachir Masovimosam. Fascinating. Everybody else around me has shortcomings. Amazing thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Kutzke used to say a person can say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and he can knock down everything. Hashem is one. All the great forces in the world, this country, this army, this technology, it's all nothing. It's nothing. He just not. It's Hashem Echad. There's only one for. He knocked down everything in the world except one thing. There's two men standing, God and me. So something you also have to turn it inward. I'm also nothing, right? So some people you can recognize bad meters and everybody else. V'lochein im. You call the Eza Machlokas, if he'll get cast into some Machlokas, the Olam Yachshav Shehu HaTzodek V'Chaver HaAshem, he'll always think that he's correct and his friend is the one who's guilty because he's not able to engage in self-criticism. The great Bali Musa always viewed it the other way initially. You're right. Yeah, they would almost, their first reaction was to think that they did something wrong, which is a level. Next, shehei tocho kabara, that his inside should be like his outside. Kibar means the outside. In Gemara, we talk about a Mishnah and a Braisa. Baraisa is from the works of the Tanoim that were not included in the Mishnah. That's where they're bar, they're on the outside. We talk about milagav and milabar, from the inside, from the outside in Gemara. So, Amr b'Maseches Yuma. The Gemara says Maseches Yuma, and in a couple of weeks we'll be reading these parshios that are relevant to this. Mibayis and Michutz Titzapenu. It's talking about the Aron, where the Luchos are stored. It shall be from the inside and from the outside. It shall be coated. Okay, right. There was wood, and then it was coated on the inside. We had a box on the inside of gold, and the outside of wood. Amr Rava. Rava says Kol Tamid Chacham. She'ein tocho kabaro, ain't a Talmud Chacham. Any Talmud Chacham that his inside is not like his outside is not a Talmud Chacham. Abaye v'itema Rav Bar Ula, he said, Nikra Nisof, he's called abominable. It's not just that he's not a Talmud Chacham, he's called abominable. Shenemar af ki nisa v'ne'elach ish shosa kamayim. That word should be avla, not be'avla. Mistake. A person who's loathsome, and it's another word for like bad, he's tainted. A person who drinks like water, avla. So it's not 100% clear what was seen in the pasuk. I think one interpretation is when you imbibe something, it's on the inside. It's not visible on the outside. So he's drinking sin like water, and on the inside there's bad stuff, but his outside still looks good. Whatever it is, Rabba Bar Ula Darshan, that a person who is not the same on the inside and the outside, is nitav, from the word toeva. Vahainu, so he's explaining here. Sha'aron shuhasama l'Torah, the aron which represents Torah. Reb Zelig Epstein used to always quote, I think it's a teaching of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that on the other kelim, the shulchan represents malchus, wealth. You would think the luchos would represent Torah. You'd think you put the crown on the luchos, but the zer, the decoration, goes on the aron, that which holds the Torah. The person who holds the Torah is what's decorated. It's not the aron is great because aron holds the Torah. It's not the Torah. Torah is God given. But a person who imbibes Torah, develops Torah, becomes a Torah holder, that's where the crown goes, not on the Torah itself. So anyway, the aron...
Doesn't the Torah have a crown?
Not the luchos.
No, but like when you take the Torah out of the aron.
Yeah, because that's Torah, you know, it's already in its mantle. The Torah per se is, it's infinite. It's beyond us. We decorate the things around the Torah.
I thought we put the...
So it's not like but you already have the cover on the Torah, yeah. The crown.
But anyway, the real symbolism comes from the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, it's not the luchos that are decorated. It's the aram. That's the point there.
Yeah, the luchos are plain.
We decorate that which holds the Torah.
Which is why you stand for Rav.
Right.
So the mantle and the crown and the everything else you put on the outside of the Torah is because that's holding it?
I mean, that's why I would explain it per our contemporary minhag, which is the Malki was raised. But in the Aron, for sure, you see it that way. It's the Aron is not the Torah itself. It's the Aron of the Torah.
Can I ask Izzy?
Very good. Oh, okay.
Izzy, huh?
It's a whole other shmooz, yeah. Tzarach liozov mi bifnim mi bachutz lahara shamatziyah shel Torah. It has to be gold on the inside and the outside to show that the reality of Torah he mitziyah shel emes. It has to be true. It has to be true on the inside and out. Umidas ha-emes mechayevas kol mashi bachutz yeshna bifnim. Whatever's on the outside has to be on the inside. Aval mashi bachutz eino mashi bifnim. If what's on the outside is not on the inside, halo kol mitziyah sheker yisoda. The whole existence is false. It's a facade. It's gold on the outside, but not on the inside. Behind him, and that is Shekisha Adam Ovid Lasakinis Atzma. When man works to fix himself, Ikar Avodasa Lasakinis Apnimiyah Shelo. His main work has to be to fix his inside. Velo Rak Sheyochush Ketzat Hu Nirab Mivachutz. Not just he should be concerned about how he looks on the outside. Now we spoke about at the beginning of this sefer that these are not it's not etiquette. It's not strategies. They're people. They're all their self-help is really just, yeah. I want to be controlled in how I present it. I don't want to be angry because it doesn't get me what I want. That's not what we're talking about.
How to win friends and influence people.
Right. That's what it is. Those are techniques. That's not midos. So that's very much what this is talking about. It might take work to put gold on the outside, but we're not looking for gold on the outside. We're looking for gold on the outside on the inside. V'amru Sham, the Gemara says there, Oylam lahem l'sonen shal tamina chacham she'oskin ba'torah v'ein v'amira shamayim. You should just realize that sometimes Chazal use a euphemism when they want to refer to the Jewish people or tamina chacham, and they say something bad, they'll say the enemies of the Jewish people, but they mean the Jewish people. They'll say the enemies of tamina chacham, but they mean tamina chacham. Right, so woe to the enemies of tamina chacham who toil in Torah and they don't have Yerushamayim. Meaning woe to a person who studies Torah and doesn't have Yerushamayim. Va'od sham sha'Torah hirak sha'ar likonis liyerushamayim. It says the Torah is a gate to get into Yerushamayim. Va'od sham, and it also says in the Gemara there, zocha nes elo samachayim, lo zocha nes is lo samisa. Torah is like a powerful elixir. If he merits, it's the elixir of life. If he doesn't, it can be the elixir of death. Torah is a powerful tool, powerful chemical, and if it's used the wrong way, if he doesn't have the midos, it can be harmful. Now, you'll ask a question on this. Vim Tomer, at the bottom of the page, Harei Amru Chazal, Olam Yasek, Olam Batorah, Mitzvah, Afilu Shelo Lishma, Shvitoch Shelo Lishma, Bala Shema. Well, he just gave me this whole speech about Tocha Gabara. I have to be the same on the inside, which sounds like I shouldn't do things if they're not sincere. I thought there's a Gemara that says one should always do Torah and Mitzvahs, even not Lishma, because from not Lishma will come to Lishma. Harei Rom Shema Seinu, Einam Tzrichim Liyas Tocha Gabara. It seems like a direct contradiction. Top of page Lamed Beis. Hatshuvahi, the answer is Shekol Zeh Toloi B'Kavonas HaAdam. It all depends on man's intention. Im HaAdam Eino Chosh Be'emes Al Kvod HaTorah B'Chlal V'Rak Al Kvod HaTorah. If he has no concern for the honor of Torah, and he's only concerned about his own honor. Halo Vadai Al Derech Sheker Hu Holech. He's going on the path of falsehood. V'im Lo Yoshuv Midarko. If he doesn't do tshuva from his ways, Nesis HaTorah Lo Sama Moves. The Torah is going to be a potion of death, because he's going to see what he wants to see. He's going to use the Torah the way he wants to use it. He can be the devil citing scriptures. Avamisha wrote to Leos ben Torah Amiti. A person wants to be a person of Torah. Ela sheka ace ein lo hachukah haratzon lomod lishma. But right now he doesn't. I don't have the yearning and the will to learn lishma. So incentivize it. Give me a prize. Give me something good that comes from it. I wish I were at a higher level. A love nema shetov shiyasok shalolishma. About him, does it say he should do it shalolishma? They say in the name of Rav Chaim of Elozhin, he used to say, even though it says you should do it shalolishma, but the lolishma has to be lishma. In other words, yeah, I need a motivator. I need an outside motivator, but I want the outside motivator so that I would actually have the right motivation. It's shalolishma lishma. That's what he used to say. I will tell you, I actually discussed this years ago. There happens to be a machlokas here. Many Rishonim hold that you're only supposed to do Shelo Lishma if it's sort of a parav Lo Lishma. It's not good, but it's not bad. I'd like to be honored. I want honor. I want people to think I'm smart. I want to do well on this test, whatever it is. But if it's lakantar lisgos, I want to study Torah so I can, show it to be wrong. I want to be arrogant. Then all the statements about how it's the elixir of death and better a person who's going to do Torah lo lishma is better he was never born, better he had been aborted. Then all those statements apply. Basically, there are some statements that sound like you should do Torah lo lishma, some that sound like you shouldn't. Most Rishonim make okimtas and say, which is a way of saying, if it's this kind of lolishma, okay, then these apply, but if it's that kind of lolishma, don't do it, that's really bad. I will tell you that the Rambam and his son, Rabbeinu Avraham ben HaRambam, hold actually no. They hold doing Torah shalolishma is terrible. It's a terrible, terrible thing, but do it anyway. Because if that's where you're at, do it anyway, and it'll get you. They hold it, it's a machine.
Like, do it for you, in order to graduate, you have right. to take
No, that it's so pure, Hamor Shabbat, the light in it. Hey, there are cases where you see this. Maybe you could argue the cases where you see like the other Rishonim, but where the guy comes in with the worst, and yeah, sure, I'll come to your shir, I'll show you the stupidity of what you're teaching another guy. And before you know it, he's.
Likes it.
Yeah, and he realizes, no, wow. This is, so the Rambam holds Torah will turn a person around. But I think even that has a caveat. When he sees the truth, he has to be willing to work with it. A person can come with a bad attitude, and you give him Torah, and he starts to sense, oh, this is not what I thought. If he still insists on being stubborn and not allowing the truth in, I mean, then he won't get there. But the Rambam holds you should just try it anyway. So next paragraph, he says, "Shamati ladakdek." I heard that people ask a question that one can like. Be exacting and raise the following question: Maro Chazal Lomer LaOlam Yase. What are they? Sometimes Chazal uses an expression LaOlam, which means like forever, but it doesn't really mean forever. Shemavur Mizeh Shemhalach Zemuchrahu Atzlochas Adam. It means it's something very important. It's necessary for man's success. LaOlam really means like you got to know. This is very important. Kol Echad Muchrach LaHaskel B'Madrega Shelo Lishma. Everybody has to start at Lo Lishma. Shei Efshel LaHasik Madregas Lishma Miyad. It's impossible to start at the level of Lishma. V'nira shebe'emes halimud ba'ofen zeh hu'be'emes begeder l'shma. Okay, this is what I was saying before. Kevin shekavanasu shayidei kach yavel madrega shelo l'shma. If everybody starts at that level, okay? Why don't you tell children, when you feel inspired to do everything for Hashem's sake, then do it. We don't want to give you tests or rewards or anything, because that would be shelo l'shma. You'll never get anywhere. So it's l'shma to go to the program. It has rewards and also has punishments for doing the wrong thing. All right, it's lo l'shma. That's the only way to get there. So therefore, it must be done that way. Now, he says in the next paragraph, one could argue about the symbolism, but Rabbi Kestenbaum suggests that that's why the middle was wood.
Meaning?
Is that what he wants to say is that really you're never perfect. Let's read. V'rem is yesh lezabaron atzmo she'afshar an hayizav mibachutz and mibefnim avorei harei emtzais oheisa shel eitz. The middle of it was wood. U'b'chol zos nechshav l'tochu kabar. That's still called tochu kabar. The inside has to be like the outside, but the very middle is not that way. Ela she'bol ramez alaf she'bevada yesh lenu chesronos. Even though we have failings, shortcomings. V'chol ma'aseinu einam la'olam l'shma. Our actions are not l'shma. Avo mikol makom kevin shiritzoneinu ha'pnimi hu la'hashlam esatzmeinu. Since our inner will is to complete ourselves. Ein zeh soser samitzis ha'Torah. So he's kind of saying, it's tocho kabaro even if you still have chesronos. That's what he wants to say. Which is interesting, because I would have viewed the Aron as being the ultimate. Not a step away. He's almost saying like the Aron really should be entirely gold. But if it represents man, there's always some wood in there, and that's okay. As long as
it was coated with gold on both sides.
Right. There were three boxes, right? An outer box of gold, an inner one of wood, and then the inside, very inside is gold.
And what's wrong with wood?
Boss?
This is the man with wood.
I don't hear her.
I couldn't hear.
Something about wood. What is wrong with wood?
What's wrong with wood?
You could argue that the wood, because the green bubby, okay, yeah. Brace yourselves. The wood comes from a tree, which is a natural thing. Now, gold in its own way is an element as well, but something about the nature of man or something about the wood as growing, changing, certainly the nature, but to brace it within the sort of like a more... less growth-oriented element, something that's stable.
I think Rav Hirsch says something like that. The word aron, aleph resh hay, which the aron comes from, really means to grow and develop. Arisi is the word you have in Tanakh. And he actually has a very inspiring comment at the very end of the book of Bereshit, of Vayechi, when it says, Vayusim ba'aron b'mitzrayim, we put a deceased in an aron.
I was going to say.
Because they grow back. It's a container for something
that's going to grow because the tree itself is natural.
Yeah, so I think in his symbolism he says that that's why there has to be wood there, which would be a different way of explaining it. He's almost saying it like it's a failing, but that's the way we are. And as long as we're working on the inside and out,
it can keep growing.
Right. Yeah. The truth is that wood
nature is human. Like
the wood is what's called the aron. It's an aron, and you coat it with gold on the inside. But the wood is really the aron, and aron grows.
That. With the mace, it goes in an aron because it could grow.
Because it's going to grow back. Tchias ha-mesim. It's our belief in the fact that death is not a permanent state of being. Right. It goes with the term we use for a coffin or a casket. It's really something I'm not doing it justice. If you look at the reverse at the very end of Parshas Vayechi. He shows how the word means something that's gonna grow back.
But then in Israel, they don't bury with that.
Yeah. But they transport with an aron. It's a word that is associated with how a nifter.
But that the wood itself will continue to change, and you know it'll decompose whatever it is going to
goes back into the ground.
Yeah,
right.
But they're very mocked that you know with the wood there can't be any metal or you know. Right?
Yeah, the chassidim of a minute like that, not to have nails. This is a whole other discussion.
Not just nails. We once had a shaila that there was somebody that wanted to be buried with their ring. It was somebody the son was from and the mother was not, and she wrote in her will that she wanted to be buried with her, you know, marriage ring, and we had to ask Rav Shmuel. Because that was in her will.
Yeah.
And I said that we could put it on top of that, you know, the d'eved, like to put it, like, you know, not
This probably has to do with some inheritance issues in the family as well.
Okay.
You can't have two things. Right.
I always thought of Lord in a very positive way.
Yeah.
It is positive.
It's letting the nature of the kids.
It's just that if you're talking about coating something with gold, I don't know if there's positive or negative here, but if you're coating something with gold on the outside and it doesn't have gold on the inside, it's lacking on the inside. You're right, it's wood on the inside, but gold is considered beautiful. If something is coated only on the outside, then it's not what we call toho kabara.
It's not consistent the whole way through. There's an inconsistency.
Right.
It's not the same on the outside and the inside.
Right, it's not totally. That's very good. It's not the same on the outside and the inside.
Right, without passing the value judgment on wood versus gold, but
it's not solid
certainly
gold.
Certainly not toho kabara.
But the aron is good on the outside and good on the inside. It's the middle that's different.
Right.
It's different, but maybe it's not necessarily bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Some talk about humility. There has to be a beauty outwardly and a beauty inwardly, but I myself, what am I? That's someone's trying to say the wood represents humility.
In a vertex.
And the next paragraph, the bottom line, basically says a person who engages in Torah mitzvahs has to know honestly where he's holding. He told the story at the bottom that he tells about an unidentified Admar. Admar stands for Adonainu, Marenu, Verabenu. It has become a term for Hasidic Rebbe. They even use it as a noun. Admorim. Admar means a Hasidic Rebbe. I've heard this story about the Kutzker. He doesn't identify. I don't remember a source, but I think it's told about the Kutzker. The Kutzker was known for his fiery truth and intolerance for anything that wasn't 100% true. So he's sitting with some great Hasidim of his on Shabbos, and one of them picks up the food and says, L'chavad Shabbos, L'chavad Shabbos, and he eats the food. No, L'chavad Shabbos. So Kuska picked up the food and said, L'chavad Manboch, which means in honor of my stomach. And he ate the food. Meaning we shouldn't fool ourselves that we're on such a high level that everything we do is l'shma. That's the way they tell it. So you can see in the bottom, L'shem HaBetan Shali. It's better in Yiddish. But is that to be honest, where am I really holding? And maybe we'll have to pick up with it next time, but on page Laman Gimel, he cites the long account there from when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was on his deathbed, and it says his Talmidim came in to see him, and he started to cry, and they said to him, they called him Ner Yisrael, the candle of Israel, the right pillar, the mighty... a hammer, why are you crying? And he said, if I was coming in front of a human judge who's alive today and tomorrow he's dead, if he gets angry at me, his anger will pass. If he incarcerates me, the incarceration will pass. If he kills me, he can only kill me in this world, which is not permanent. And if I want, I can appease him, I can bribe him. I would still be nervous, I would still be crying. Now that they're taking me in front of the King of Kings, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who lives forever, and all of those limitations don't apply. If he's angry, his anger is eternal, and etc., etc. And I can't talk him out of it. I can't bribe him. And am I going to Gan Eden or to Gehenna? It's a very emotional account there. And then they said, "Rabbeinu, bless us." He was on his deathbed, and he said the famous words: "It should be Hashem's will that you should fear Shemayim the way you fear people. Have fear of God the way you fear people." So the Talmidim said, "That's it." And he said, yes, halavai, and I'll prove it to you. People will do a sin and say, I hope nobody sees me. So people are more afraid of other human beings than they are of God. So he asks the question here. He says, why is it this whole thing, it's when they walked in, he started to cry. He says, his talmidim came in, kevon shara osam hischa livkos. Once he saw them, he started to cry. Answers Rabbi Kestenbaum, he said, it could be... when he saw his Talmidim, he remembered all of the honor they give him. Great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm sure they treat him with honor. And he was afraid, maybe he wasn't Tocho Kabaro. Yeah,
they should fear Hashem the way they fear people.
Yeah, that was the blessing he gave them, which is a lesson unto itself. So he was very concerned. Yeah, people think I'm great, etc. That's why he started to cry, and that's why the bracha that he gives them is basically one of this type of emes. You should fear Hashem the way you fear people. How do you act in front of people? I act that way. How do I act when there are no people around? That's really what's on the inside. So he's giving them a bracha that's really about honesty in and out, being tocho kabaro. And we'll have to come back to it next time. We're already out of time, but he's going to talk about it. But don't make the mistake and think that being tocho kabaro means you shouldn't do anything on the outside until you've achieved it on the inside. That would be baro ketocho. Because I don't say you should be baro ketocho. That would mean if I'm pretty rotten on the inside, so I better make sure to act rotten on the outside just so you not have any misimpressions. It's the other way. As we said last time, the chitzonius, the outside, start with the outside, but then work on synchronizing and making the inside up to speed. Okay, we'll continue next time.
I want to give you a final thing. Moira Schild, who was the, you know, the Olav Schild, who was the kindergarten teacher at Torah Academy for many years, my great Rebbe, would say to the children, you know, that, and like, you should smile, because if you smile, no matter how you feel, you know, like, mitzvah gedolah liyot b'simcha, but that the idea that if you smile on the outside, you will change how you feel on the inside. Right. And explaining it to little kids was
It's
a hard one.